Paul. Welcome to With the Wind, Science Revealed. This show's a little different. I know you're going to enjoy it. I talked to Grandpa James. He wrote a booklet called Letter to My Grandkids for My Great-Grandkids. COVID is what woke him up to something's going on with vaccines. And the more he dove into his own research, the more he realized, oh my gosh, my great-grandkids, those kids are about to have babies or have just had babies. They're in danger if they don't have this information. How do I get it to them? He writes a letter, it turns into a book. It's very well done, easy to follow. And then we wrap up the show, well, Dee Dee wraps up the show with just that personal touch, talking to a grandpa about what it's like trying to communicate to others, and in this case, his own kids and grandkids. It's a good one. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. My topic today is balance. We have a pretty chaotic world, don't we? There's never been a time that balance was more important than now. You know, when I look back on my own life, for most of my career, I was incredibly out of balance. I was a ridiculously hard worker. I mean, at times I was leaving the house at 6 in the morning and coming back at 11 at night, sometimes 7 days a week. That's not balance. I needed balance between my work life and home life. I needed balance in finding personal time, time to exercise, time for proper nutrition, for sleep, for spiritual work. All of that was going by the wayside because I was so out of balance. You know, if I've been told, well, I'm a single mom. I'm a single dad. I have to work to provide. And that's sort of what I thought. I was working to be a good provider. I scored on that one, but I failed on just about everything else. So balance is important. You know, if you have kids, taking time to, maybe you just lay with them for 5 or 10 minutes in the morning or at night, so you're physically connected. That's important, reading stories, spending time. It doesn't have to be a lot of time, but you do need that connection. Maybe on your days off, if you've got kids, you're doing chores together, everybody's working, so then you've got free time. So you can go out and play together and really enjoy each other's company. Dee Dee Hoover and I have been wellness coaching as part of Kids First Forever, and that's one of the things we work on is helping people find balance. And we look at those four big areas, the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual. We need balance in all these areas. We can all do this. That's how we change the world. That's how we change ourselves, our kids, our family. This is how we extend love to everyone. Welcome. I'm going to call you Grandpa James because the way I got introduced to you was finding your book. And the book you wrote, it's titled To My Grandchildren, For My Great-Grandchildren. It's a masterpiece. And so thank you for doing that. And we're going to chat more about that. It's so great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure for me to be here. And I hope that I can be of some help, some value.
Oh, I'm sure you can. Your background was in broadcast TV in Hollywood, where I think you spent 25 years. Then you moved to Maui. You've lived there for 20 years. And you wrote, what is most important to me is my spiritual evolution, becoming more aware of my purpose for being given the gift of life. I just love that. We were chatting right before the show, and you were mentioning working with Eckhart Tolle, and I've read his books. I love his work, and you've gotten to work directly with him. Wow. Could you share with our audience, expand a little more about your life journey and how you became aware of the vaccine issue?
Sure. I can give you a summary of my story and how the book even came about, actually. I, like probably most of the people in the United States, I had a lot of faith in the government health agencies and felt that they would take care of us and make sure that the best health system was happening for the betterment of everybody involved and was looking out for us and that sort of thing. And so I never questioned them or the government. Whenever they said, I knew they did a lot of research and made sure everything was up and up. But then when the COVID-19 thing happened and it looked like that wasn't the case, I started checking into it and finding other data by scientists that had other points of view, so to speak, of what was actually going on, and started looking more and more at that, and found a lot, really. And anybody can if they really look for it. But anyways, I became very concerned because of what was going on. And then doing more research through and finding you also, and finding out the work that you were doing to expose some of that, I became very concerned and wanted to do something to make more people know about what was actually going on, as opposed to just taking the word of the government and the public health agencies. So my first concern was my loved ones, because I didn't want them to be harmed in any way unnecessarily. And the only people in my life right now that are even approaching that were my grandchildren. My children are 50 and 52, and they each had 3 children. So they were beyond the childhood vaccines situation. But my grandchildren were still young, but four of them were ages 16 to 22, which is approaching the childbearing age. And so I thought it would be good to at least make them informed so they knew about it. So when the time did come, they would be aware that there was more than just what they were told by their, most likely their doctor and the CDC organization. So I started with writing a letter. I just figured I would write a letter rather than talk to them, because I could just talk to them one-on-one or even as a group, because I had come to San Diego often to visit them. And so I figured I could do that, but I didn't think they would stick with them, especially the younger ones. 3 years later, he starts to having a family and he would forget about what grandfather told him years ago. So I figured I would write a letter to them that they could hang on to. And I started with the letter, and I wanted to include a lot of information in there. And the letter grew into graphs and things like that. And so it became more than just a letter. And I have a background also in book design and book layout that I do. So I figured I'll make a little booklet for them. That way I can include everything. And so that's how the booklet actually came about. I wrote a letter in the beginning of it, like I was going to write the letter. And then in the majority of the book is information about what's actually going on in tests, and your information also, obviously. And that's how I connected with you with this, because I wanted to send you a copy of the book after I got done with it so you could see what I did. But anyway, I made the book and the booklet, and I gave it to my grandchildren and gave it all to them, and they all got it and read it and gave some good reactions to it. They were positive about it, and they thought that it was done very well and everything. But since they're not ready to have children right now, it wasn't real important to them. But one of the reasons why I wanted to do the booklet also is so they could have it and keep it and reference it in the future, and also show it to other friends that they might have that are having children, and also make them aware of what's going on and actually have something to show them. So that was the idea. And I did that, and pretty much I thought it was done because I gave it to them and they had it and everything, and it was kind of done. But then there's a lady that I send to my books that I work on to edit them and proofread them. And so I did that with this booklet just to make sure that it was at least decent. And when I did that and she read it, she said she wanted a couple of copies to give to her daughter. She had 2 daughters that were in their 20s. And so she wanted a couple of copies of it. And of course I said, sure. And then some of my family members also, my brothers and sisters, I talked to them about it, and they wanted copies of it to give to their kids and some other friends I had. And it was turning into a thing where I was ordering these books and having to send them out and everything. So I figured I'll put it on Amazon and they can tell anybody they want, and then they can just order it and get it. I don't have to be the middle between the whole thing. So that's
glad you did. I have the one copy that you sent me. And just yesterday, I visited my son who's just had a baby, and your book addresses the elephant in the room that I was having a hard time getting through to them, because I'm that guy that, I've been labeled an anti-vax, whatever, which isn't really the case. I'm just for science and for the truth.
Sure.
But even with my son knows he was vaccine injured. But he's married a woman who's very much pro-system. And they just believe in public health and the stories they've been told.
Sure.
And I thought, when I try to bring it up, my son even told me a few months ago, Dad, just don't talk to my wife about this. So I was like, I felt like I was shackled. And it just was driving me nuts, because knowing what we know, not being able to share it. So it was so timely that your little book came out, just so I could go and finally, yesterday we had a breakthrough. I walked in with your little book and I put it on the coffee table. I didn't mention a thing. And I was holding my grandson, and that went really well. He just snuggled up, fell asleep for a couple hours. It was gorgeous. And then my son actually brings up vaccines because he looked at the book, and I said to him, "Well, I thought we weren't supposed to talk about vaccines." And his wife was in the kitchen. She said, "No, it's okay." And we actually had a good conversation, and I was able to leave them with the book. Mm-hmm. One of the things you did in the, at the back there is you have the graphs that came from my research, and they just jump out at you, right?
Yeah.
You got your orange line, which are the vaccinated kids. Mind you, and I think you know this, but if anybody's watching, I wrote the book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan, and then later came out with this research that was actual patients born into my practice comparing vaccinated to unvaccinated. But what most people miss is that the vaccinated that are in that research study that represent the graphs in your book, those are vaccine friendly plan vaccinated. Those are not CDC vaccinated. I didn't really have CDC vaccinated patients in my practice, maybe one or two, at least those who were born into my practice. Their siblings might have been fully vaccinated, but the infants born into my practice, growing up in my practice, they had less than half of the CDC schedule. And yet, as those graphs show, compared to the unvaccinated, the vaccine friendly plan vaccinated kids had a lot more medical issues. There was clearly something going on that it wasn't safe. Do you have a medical background? Because you covered the material in your book very well.
No, I don't. No medical background at all. I felt that I just touched on it. I mentioned in there that there were three issues that I addressed in the booklet, but there are many more issues. It's not like there's only three, but these were, to me, some of the key issues that are dealing with the vaccine schedule, the CDC vaccine schedule. And so I just wanted to give them an idea that there's a thing going on here. And I didn't want to say, you know, you have to do this and all this. I just wanted to say, look at this and draw your own conclusions. I think I mentioned in there that I had drew my conclusions from it, and you look at this and draw your own conclusions and do what you think is right. But I just wanted them to be aware that there's something else going on here besides what you've been told. And that was the main point.
Speak a little, you're almost a decade older than I am, so you have even greater time on this earth to have witnessed a massive change, right? The vaccine schedule has changed. When I was reading your book, actually, you mentioned what the vaccine schedule was in 1949. And share that with our viewers.
It wasn't, I don't even know if it was labeled the vaccine schedule at the time. There were just some, I think there were two or three vaccines that you could get for your child to try and prevent illness in the future. And that's basically all there was. And then over the years, they just kept adding and adding. And I think it's up to 73 times you get a shot by the time you're 18.
Adding the COVID to the schedule, which they just did this year.
This was before all that. And I was just amazed. I had no idea because obviously I haven't had children for many years and I didn't realize that it had grown that much.
So when you were growing up in the United States, and I grew up in Africa, like I said, almost a decade after you, but still, you were growing up in the 50s. I was growing up in the late 50s, 60s. You had, I think you wrote that you had two shots. And I think I had a couple, two, three shots. It just was so different than what's happening for kids today. But think back to when you were growing up as a child, and probably in your case, even young adulthood. Do you recall seeing any kids with autism?
No, I didn't even know it existed. There was nothing. The most I can remember is I knew there were a couple of people that had kids that had mental illness, but it wasn't autism. It was something else that they were dealing with. And I didn't know too much about it. And it was so rare that it was considered not a problem because it was just so rare. It was just through the millions of kids being born, one has something wrong with them. And so it wasn't as big an issue as it is today. I didn't realize the issue that there is today either until all this information came out. I didn't realize it was happening like that. I did find out through my son in talking about this that he has three people that he knows that I know that were kids he went to school with that have children now, and three of them have autism. Three different friends of his.
Friends.
Have kids with autism.
Yeah.
And he said, you can't believe how much it's become an issue with that generation.
Yeah. You touched on it in your book, and you have a graph that shows when you and I were kids, the autism rate was probably 1 in 10,000, if that.
Yeah.
And then back a decade and a half, decade ago, it was 1 in 166.
which is a lot.
A few years ago, it was down to 1 in 45. And then just this year, they released the latest data, and it's 1 in 36, I believe. In California, 1 in 22. And the projections are we're headed towards the next generation. One out of two boys would have autism.
That's crazy. It's just, and to think that nobody's doing anything about it is what's really amazing to me.
It's insanity. And some of the scientists, in fact, most scientists that are really involved with caring for large numbers of autistic families and kids, we know it's related, highly related to the vaccines. It's not just the vaccines. But if that was just the one single thing you changed, it would be a massive benefit to your children. And so your book, thank you, I think is a nice little wake-up call, if you will. So yeah, you addressed that. I think you also addressed, I'd be interested in your perspective because you come from it like a grandpa, right? You don't have medical background. You look into this. Where would you recommend parents go so that they can make good choices for their infant or their children? Because that's what you had to do. The COVID world woke you up to, wait a minute, things aren't adding up here. Let's look at the whole picture, which includes the childhood schedule. Where would you recommend people start if they want to do this research for themselves? And by the way, folks, you better get this little book because it makes it.
The thing is, the information that's in the book is available to anybody. I just took that information and put it in the book. I didn't create any information myself. I just gathered it and put it in there. And much more information is available too if you want to look for it. You have great resource for information. The study that you did and the books that you have are excellent for information about what's going on in that world. There are others. Del Bigtree is a good source of information, and he addresses a lot of this. The frontline doctors, there's other organizations that have information about them. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I have them bookmarked. So
yeah, Children's Health Defense, perhaps.
Yeah. And big time. They're really into it and are exposing a lot of this and making people aware of the information that is available out there. And that's been the big problem, is it's just people don't know. Once they find out and can consider what's actually going on, they're become more aware of what's actually their choices are and how to avoid a lot of this. That's my feeling anyway. And for me personally, I was doing this to inform my grandchildren, which I did. And I didn't realize that it was going to turn anything more than that. And I don't feel like I have any authority to even say anything other than point to things that other people have put together. But the only thing I can say for myself is other grandparents and even parents need to inform their kids about this sort of thing that aren't informed. And I think that's the biggest thing, is informing. And I guess that's the biggest thing that could come from this interview, is the idea that we need to get together and find out the real facts and inform the people that are having children that this is the case, and you be aware of it and make the right choices accordingly. Because once they have autism, they have it. It's not like you can take some pills or something and cure it or whatever. It's something that you have to deal with forever. And
it's extremely difficult to cure, but there are kids who recover. But it's a tough journey, and not all kids recover fully, that's for sure.
Take that road either.
Yeah. It's one thing I always say about the vaccines, the pause, hold off until you do your research, because you can't take it out once it's been put in there. Yeah. That's certainly true of the COVID jab. That's been the worst one of all. You touch on vaccine safety. I think you mentioned at the beginning of our interview, there were three things one of them, I think, was vaccine safety. Do you want to speak a little bit to that? What did you find when you researched that?
The biggest thing for me with vaccine safety is we were, especially with the COVID vaccine, the safe and effective mantra, it just, I think, threw everybody off. And that was one of the first things that I realized, that there was something going on here when that was pounded into our heads, and that didn't seem like that was what was actually happening. And so the safety issue became very important. And I wanted to point out through the research that has been done, and the proper research, that this isn't so safe. And there are a lot of things that can happen by taking this chance of the vaccine, especially the COVID-19 one, where obviously it is of no help at all and you're just risking your health. So that was one of the big ones that I wanted to make them aware of, make It's not what they say it is. It's not that safe. They say safe, but what makes it safe? It means there's no complications. There are, and that's proven even in the Paris reports. There are complications. They even admit it, but they're not broadcasting it, so to speak. They just broadcast a safe and effective mantra. And so you don't know.
Yeah, that's safe and effective as a marketing strategy, honestly. There's no such thing as a safe pharmaceutical product. Everything has risk. And so really what folks, parents, you should be weighing is risk and benefit. And sadly, the risks have become so high and the benefits so minuscule. In the case of the COVID jab, I'd say there's no benefit. It's all risk. But yeah, you pointed out that the pharmaceutical industry has no liability. That was the Childhood Immunization Act of 1986. Wow, what a business model. You have no liability, so there's no reason to make your product safe. And you have guaranteed profits because you get your product mandated to the population. It's, if you really let that sink in, it's just insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they don't use placebos for a true saline placebo.
Well, yeah. I think I mentioned that. The testing was not done properly. It was all done for their benefit, basically. Yeah.
You inject a harmful aluminum shot as the placebo or another vaccine as the placebo.
Yeah.
And so, of course, both arms look the same. They're both horrible. They both have terrible outcomes. But you say, yep, there's no difference. So therefore, it's safe. I think, so what were the other things you touched on? The three things you were covering?
The autism aspect and also aluminum. The aluminum in all the shots that they give out and how bad it is. There was a professor in, I think it was England, that was like the aluminum specialist.
Exley.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and he started looking into it and finding out things. And then obviously, like you, he lost his job and everything else because he was finding out what they didn't want people to know. But it was so obvious that this is a problem and so obvious that they were doing it anyway.
That's been a huge pet peeve of mine. Back in the late 1990s, little premature infants in the NICU would be put on what they call parenteral nutrition, which is IV nutrition. And the food that they give in the IV was always contaminated with too much aluminum. And so they published studies showing that if you exceed 5 micrograms per kilogram per day of aluminum, you had neurodevelopmental problems. So we've known this for almost 3 decades, and yet they keep adding more and more aluminum to the childhood vaccine schedule to the point where Jack Lyons Wheeler and I have published a paper, and he's published several others, and Exley's published tons of literature showing how incredibly toxic the childhood schedule is now because of all the aluminum in so many of the vaccines. But they turn a blind eye to it, just as they had done to thimerosal, which was mercury that was phased out rather rapidly when they realized they'd made that same mistake. As they added more and more vaccines with mercury, thimerosal, they far exceeded safe levels. They did that almost instantly in 2000, 2001, when they moved the hepatitis B vaccine from teenagers to newborns.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the 250 micrograms of aluminum vaccines. And a newborn, even if you're a big baby, 10 pounds, let's say, you're 3.5 kilos, 3 times 5 micrograms, the maximum daily limit is 15. You're injecting 250. It's just.
Yeah, I know. When I look at that information, I go, how can they do this? It's almost like they're trying to harm the kids.
This is my thinking. And just because it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So because they took the thimerosal out around 2000, 2001, they needed to replace that toxin with something. Oh, let's just move the hep B to the newborns. I'm not sure somebody actually thought that way, but you have to wonder. It just made no sense.
Oh, yeah. It's one thing after another. And then you look at the statistic, you know, the first day of birth, I think it's United States has more deaths than any other Western country.
Yeah. We're number one in infant mortality.
Yeah.
We're also number one in the number of vaccines given.
Yeah. Somebody should be looking into this, you would think. Our health agencies, well, I guess they don't care.
You would think. And that's the challenge, I think, for it was my challenge. I was trained at Dartmouth. I went to the UC California medical system for my pediatric residency. I was teaching residents and medical students right out of my training. And I was teaching what I was taught. And so vaccines was the most important thing you could do as a pediatrician. Pediatricians today are still being taught that same thing. And so how do you go from that philosophy and belief system to be able to do a 180 and realize that what you've been taught and what you've been doing is probably the worst thing you could do. It's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. And some doctors just can't do it.
No, it's most can't.
It's easier to just stay with the flow. And yeah, because it's just too hard to turn around financially and everything. It's just, which is sad because look at all the harm that's being done by that happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So your little booklet, your book to my grandchildren, for my great grandchildren, because as you said, your grandchildren are now approaching childbearing age. Some of them are in the childbearing age. It's so brilliant that you provide this booklet to them before they have kids, because it's interesting. It sounds like your grandchildren were receptive, at least. They were willing to look at it. They were willing to have a conversation. I met resistance.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm addressing it too late. It's almost, if you're watching and you have kids that are middle school and beyond, get this book in front of them and have discussions about it. If you're watching and you aren't sure about this issue at all, again, sometimes it's easier to start with just a simple primer. I would call your book a nice, simple review that's easily digestible. And that's the gift that it is to the world. Sometimes big books are just overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I was trying to not do, is to make it too complicated and too confusing to them to read just for the information that they need. And it does get into a little bit of detail in the book itself. But one of the points I wanted to make was this was not my opinion of what's going on. This is proven research. And I wanted to make sure that they knew that it wasn't just a concept.
I want to pivot a little bit because your area of expertise for your career was in broadcast television. And I'm curious, what have you seen in that industry? We'll call it your industry, in terms of censorship.
I started working in broadcast television in about 1976, 77, somewhere around there. And at that time, the broadcast stations were individually owned. They weren't owned by corporations. They were just different people. A lot of the people were still in the television industry that started television years ago. They were older at the time, getting retirement age and that sort of thing and phasing out of the business, but some of them were still involved in television. And that was when I was getting into it. And I was young at the time. And so it was actually a pleasure to work, because when we worked on the shows, we did it as a family. The actors, the technical people, the catering people, everybody worked together to make the show happen. And so we had parties together and all this sort of thing, big family. But then over the next 5 years, 7 years, corporations saw the power of television and started buying up the networks. And at that time, Fox Television was first starting out, and I worked for a local TV station in Los Angeles at Metro Media, and they were owned locally, and Fox was creating this national television network. And so they were buying up local stations and creating this network. And Metro Media was one of them that they bought. So I was involved in the beginning of the Fox Television. And I actually ended up working there for 11 years, staff at Fox Television. But for me, what was happening was, as the corporations were buying up these television stations, they changed the whole way that things were done. Corporations don't work the way that these other people were running the organizations. And so it wasn't fun anymore. It became work. And they were doing things that were corporate. We had these directors who would direct the shows that had experience and knew what they were doing and actually made the shows popular, but they charged a lot of money, but they were making these number one shows. I worked on shows like All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Maude.
Oh, wow.
These number one shows.
Yeah.
When Fox came in, they didn't want to pay these people that kind of money. They felt that was too much. So they were using people that just got out of television school, and we would sit there for 14 hours a day, and they would keep making mistakes, and they wouldn't get the same product. And they would end up paying more money to make the show because of the mistakes made. But that's corporations. That's how they work. So I left Fox. I went freelance because I just couldn't deal with that anymore. But I found that the other networks were the same, because I went to work for them freelance, and they were doing the same thing. It was changing into the same kind of thing. So that's maybe why I get out of the business itself. It just wasn't the same that it was. So now there were a couple individual production companies that still remained to be family oriented and were independent and just sold the shows to the networks. But those were very few. and everybody in the industry were trying to get on those shows because those are the ones you really wanted to work on.
Yeah. What's your take on the news? Because it seems to me, like Del Bigtree, for example, he was producing the show The Doctors. And when he tried to do some real investigative journalism into the vaccine issue, he was told he couldn't.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, you can't cover this. So basically he left because he didn't feel it's ethical to be shackled.
And yeah, when you can see what's going on, you have to make that decision. Do you want to be part of that or not? And I did work the news, the weekend news for Fox Television in Los Angeles. But I was just doing it as an engineer. I just did the sound on it. I wasn't producing it at the time. And so I was like on the show and seeing what was going on. I worked with the directors and the producers, but I could see how they were doing the show. Oh, and it became a show for ratings, not a show for news, so to speak, for the community. There were things going on in the community that shouldn't get on the news show, but they were covering the motorcycle gang coming in from Las Vegas that stopped and created this havoc at some gas station or something that would draw people's attention to, as opposed to what needed to be said for the community. And I could see that going on, just doing things for the ratings and not paying attention to what was going on in the community. And I said, that doesn't work. It's not really a news show anymore. And that was...
So as you were doing your research, sorry to interrupt, as you were doing your research for your book, did you look to the news as a source of information?
No, I knew better than that. A long time ago, I knew better than that. Yeah, not the regular broadcast news stations.
Yeah. But why not? This is where a lot of people get their information. My mom would sit at home. She recently passed. She's 90. And she got her health information from CNN and MSNBC. And she even told me, and Mom, rest in peace, Paul, how can you be right and all the other doctors are wrong?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. And a lot of people still do that. They trust that these big networks will give them the right information. And as you can see, if you look further, that's not the case. And you can see how they're all dictated the same propaganda to tell people. And they all say it the same way, almost word for word in some cases.
Yeah.
How they do that. There are other news sources. I mean, the High Wire and other things that's technically a news station, so to speak. So you have to find the sources that actually follow the research and the scientists that are really doing the real work to find out what's actually going on. And then you can see, read between the lines when you do watch those other stations that avoid talking about anything that's necessary and just copy whatever propaganda that they've been told to say.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I watched a regular news show. I gave up on that a long time ago. I knew that they weren't doing it anyway.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And same here. Del Bigtree's The High Wire, folks. If you are not plugged into that, it's just once a week. Yes, he goes on for an hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes, but he's bringing just whatever's really important that's going on in the world. You get the real story, that deep dive into it, true investigative journalism, not just sound bites that are people reading a teleprompter. Before I get Dee Dee on to delve into your heart and soul, I do want to ask you a little bit, just because it's been on my bucket list when I get old. Well, I'm there. I'm old now. At least old enough to know you've moved to Maui to work on spiritual evolution and your purpose in the world. Just share a little bit about that.
I actually was working on it before I moved to Maui. I mentioned I worked with Eckhart Tolle for 6 years, and I was doing that when I lived in LA. Actually, when I started getting out of the television industry, when I left Fox and was freelance, and I saw that I didn't really want to do that anymore. And I was focusing more on my spirituality. And I wanted to use what I knew in television production to help teachers that I felt strong about to get their message out. So that's why I approached these people, and with the possibility of doing things that could spread their word a lot easier. And so that's when I first started contacting them, people that I read their books or saw what they were doing and I connected with, and I wanted to help them. I worked with a number of other teachers too, Gary Zukav and Ram Dass and other people too. But that was my main, I wanted to give what I could to help this movement, because when I read Gary Zukav's book, that just made such a big impression on me. I thought to myself, I wish I would have read this 3 years ago, because I made some decisions that I wouldn't have made that way if I would have known this information. So that's what inspired me to help others get this information before they made decisions that they would regret later. So that's how I was expanding myself, but helping others at the same time. I felt drawn to do that, and I still do. But that's how it came about. It just, the move to Maui, I had been coming to Maui for a long time before because my family was on Maui. So I would come here every year when I lived in LA to visit them. So it became my second home. And I just eventually moved here after my kids grew up and they had their own families. I felt that it was time for me to do that. So that's what I did. And I'm in San Diego now, and I still come here a couple of times a year, and they come out and visit me, and we still stay connected and that sort of thing. In working with these teachers and doing my own research into different teachings, because I don't follow one spiritual teaching. I have like a gathering of different teachers' ideas and work with the ones that I connect with. But by doing that and working on myself, I found my life to change a lot, to become more aware and enjoy life a lot more and have a lot more gratitude about life and inspired to help others also, including my family and friends and other people too.
That's beautiful. And in fact, that makes sense now why you would create this book to my grandchildren, for my great grandchildren, because that's in your life's mission and purpose, to help others and to bring important information to us, to the world. So I thank you for that. And God bless you. I can't wait to meet you in person, hopefully on Maui. I love Maui. So folks, you can go on Amazon and get this little book. It's a treasure. Now you get to talk with Dee Dee. That's how we wrap up our shows. And I always look forward to her segments. So here's Dee Dee.
Hi, Grandpa James. Thank you for being willing to talk to me. Thank you for the book. I just listened to the interview that you did with Doc, and I wanted to talk to you about the spiritual piece myself. And he started in on it, so I want to continue on that. Do you mind sharing, and this is personal, if you don't want to, you don't have to, but what was happening in your life before you realized you needed to make some changes and that waking up your soul and spiritually connecting became important? For that journey, many people, it's because, and I've coached many people through this because I love working with people with their spiritual, and I've been a spiritual guide for a long time. And I noticed that generally when someone comes to me, there was something in their past that wasn't working. And whether they were working through their own childhood trauma, or they had made choices and decisions where they had hurt others, there's many different reasons that we get drawn to something like this. Can you share what yours?
I would say that I went to a Catholic grade school in high school. And when I finished high school, I realized that wasn't really working for me, the Catholic religion. It didn't answer the questions that I had inside me that, you know, about life and why we're here and that sort of thing. So that left me empty. So I wanted to find out if there was a religion or something that could help me explain more of what I was questioning. And so it's been a journey since then on a lower level. As I got older, it became more important. But I was always looking, and probably after I started having children, which I had at a young age, I was 22 when I had both my children, only a year and a half apart. And that kind of opened your eyes to more about what life is about when you have children. And so then it became even stronger for me that not only what is my life about, what is their life about? And I want to know more for myself, but also so I can pass along to my children. And so it became stronger in me, and I started associating more with other people that were looking for the same thing. And so I had a couple of friends that would find things and say, hey, check this out, check what this person is saying. And it's interesting how their approach is to life and what they're saying about it and that sort of thing. So I would read that and try some different things. And it's been an ongoing thing for a long time. I don't think there was just one incident that made me say, hey, I got to find out. It's evolving. And I think that's why I kind of address it as my spiritual evolution, because it's started off slow and small and has been growing. And the more that I personally find that I can connect and become aware and realize what's actually going on here, the more I can enjoy life and don't let things that don't really matter upset me and things of that nature, that makes it seem like a more fuller life and have more gratitude for things that some other people might not even see because they're not right. looking for it, that sort of thing. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
it does. So what I heard, and again, I'm working with so many different people who yeah. are on the same path and looking for resources and things. I just heard that it sounds like it was in you anyway. We talk about, sometimes we hear about old souls and new souls, experienced souls. There's so much terminology out there. And I heard you mention to some of the people who have written and done work on accessing your higher power, your God, yourself, your love. There's so many terms and ways and things to look at it. But I feel like every child is, and every time anyone's born, there's a soul there. There's something there that's connected. And sometimes people use religion to live their lives by. There's all these different things. It sounds like your soul was what was guiding you, is what I hear. There wasn't anything that, your didn't sound like your world totally fell apart or you were a drug addict or any of those things happened that pushed you in a better direction. It sounds like something within you was just reaching out for it, calling for it.
Yeah, I figured I was curious about certain things about death. It seemed to me that at a young age, I remember thinking that everybody dies, but nobody knows what happens after you die. Why isn't the whole world looking at questioning this and trying to find out what happens after you die and everything? It's like, it's such a big thing and nobody even mentions much about it. They can't, and in the United States, they hide it. They don't.
I was just going to say, I think there is a lot of people who have looked into it. And there's a lot of stories, there's movies on it. But as soon as somebody speaks out about that, having a near-death experience or I've hid my own experience, just because you talk about anything that maybe you saw something or felt something that's beyond, you're crazy. That just doesn't exist. And so I think that's why a lot of people do keep even all of this soul spiritual work to themselves, is that there's too much judgment. There's too many people that don't believe, or that fear of, they would rather just not know than have information they can't understand. Do you feel the same way?
That's true. But I also feel that everybody's at their own stage. I don't have a problem with anybody in a religion or anything like that. I figure if they're following their path and they're making themselves better and more connected with God or whatever you want to call it, then that's good. Whatever path that, you know, you follow to take you there, good. And so everybody's got their own path and everybody's at their own place. And so I don't think anything different about them. If that's where they're at and they don't understand or they don't want to go any further or whatever, then that's where they're at. I don't think they're bad or wrong or anything. That's just who they are. But for those, which I find to be more than the majority of people, are interested in knowing more, learning more, or expanding more, becoming more aware, that's happening more and more. And I think, especially with the younger generation, I see it happening more and more, even with my grandchildren. They were both, my son and my daughter raised their kids as Christians and take them to church every Sunday and that sort of thing, which I think is great. I don't belong to that organization or the Christian organization myself. It's a good path and there are a lot of good lessons to learn from it. And when I come and visit with them, I go to their church with them and that sort of thing, because I believe that there's a lot to that and it's a good thing. But now some of them are questioning other things. And so they can talk to me about it.
Awesome though.
Yeah.
And especially sounds like they have parents too, that although this is their beliefs and this is what they're doing with their kids, that they still want, we should all want our kids to be independent thinkers and learners. And if you question something, have a space you can go to, and it sounds like they can go to you. And I think that's the incredible piece, is because I think whether it's religion, spirituality, anything, what I feel like is we're all supposed to be here and love unconditionally and be kind and loving. Why would you want to be any other way? But with so much chaos, tell me your opinion on that, as far as the world being so chaotic. And like you said, there's this majority that's reaching out for more and questioning and wanting to know more. I think it's funny, we get so frustrated with COVID and everything that happened, but man, COVID sure has that whole experience and chaos and the vaccine, everything, I feel like has pushed us to think more, to look inside ourselves. And I think more and more people are wanting to do the research to find out how to, like you just said, how do I become a better person? How do I live a better life?
And it's very confusing because these big authority figures are telling us the wrong things. And it's hard to swallow that. And there was one teacher that said something that I thought was very good. And it was that there are people out there that are very smart and are very wealthy and can do a lot with those two things, but they're not wise. And so they won't be successful because they're not wise people. They're just smart and wealthy. And so they can create a lot of chaos and havoc and a lot of sadness with people, but it's not going to overwhelm the world because they can't be successful. They're not wise enough to do that. And I can see that happening with what's going on today. It's pretty strong. It's very powerful, but it's starting to fall apart in a lot of places, that sort of thing. And part of it is this idea, which has existed for such a long time, that money is the most important thing and everything you want is money and everything. But there was a quote that I heard that I think sums it up. And it was, I know people that are so poor that all they have is money. And
I love that.
Yeah, that kind of sums it up, that, you know, what that's actually worth. You got to really realize that, and most people do in the end too, or even at some point in their life, realize how important their loved ones are and other people, as opposed to just getting a lot of money and having more headaches because of it. I've known people that have done that, but I know wealthy people too that are good people and happy people. It's not, money isn't necessarily a cause for evil. It can be, but it's not necessarily that way. I don't look at money as a bad thing. I just look at it as though it can be. And for a lot of people, it is.
On the purpose, I think if we look at the purpose of why we're making money or why, because we know Layla Centner is a big example for me, that they have had success and they use that success to help others, the school they've developed, all the things they've done. And I feel like those are the people that are making a difference. That does help. But you're right. There's a lot of people out there, and I'm going to say it, just pharmaceutical industry itself. That amount of money has had a lot of power. But at the same time, like you said, that I think you said wise. And again, I think it's whether or not they're wise. I think, again, if the intent is just to have money, just to have power, just to have control, then no, that's not good. But if the intent is to be able to be successful, have money, to help others, to share, to make it easier for yourself to love and be free and be out there, then that's different, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. And the original idea of the pharmaceutical company was to help people be more healthy. That's fine. I think that's a good intent. We all want to be healthy, but to distort it and to turn it into a money-making organization as opposed to making people healthy and sometimes causing people to be unhealthy, that just turned it all around and turned it into a whole another issue. And I think that's one of the reasons why most people have a hard time believing that there's something wrong with it, because it's so important and so big, and how could they be wrong? But,
and that's the thing. I think it takes something big sometimes to uncover. It's funny because I want to bring something up. I don't know if people think about this, but you had just said that pharmaceuticals and those medications we came up with them and we invented them, like you said, to help people be healthy. And yet every time I hear an ad for any kind of medication or pharmaceuticals online, it shares, yes, this is going to help you with diabetes. And then the next 100 words are, but it could cause this and cause that. How is that healthy?
Exactly.
That amount of money, why aren't we creating drugs and vaccines and things that actually don't have all the bad affiliated with it? So that's my own personal thing.
No, I agree.
Before we go, I want to ask you, now that you're doing this work for yourself, what's the most important thing in your next 15, 20, 30 years of life? Because I see you living a long time. What do you want to do for your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren? I feel like that's part of why you're doing all this hard work, is because the more we become our best self and live our best life and connect with that higher power, that it spreads. We share it with other. It's contagious to be around those people. So what's your focus with your grandchildren and great-grandchildren?
I've always wanted to. I never had a real connection with my grandparents. My One of my grandfathers died when I was like 7 years old, and I didn't really know him. My other grandfather didn't like kids, so we were told to stay away from him when we were kids. So I didn't have a relationship with my grandparents. One of my grandmothers, she was blind in one eye, and she had a number of illnesses. She was very sweet and everything, but I never got real close to her. And my other grandmother, she had so many kids that she never really had time for any of us, really. And I was one of six in my family. So when we came to visit grandma, there were six of us. And so I really never had a connection. And when I had my children, and I always wanted to have two children, and I was fortunate enough to have two great children, I never really thought about grandchildren. I always thought about children. Now when the grandchildren showed up, I figured, oh, great, babies, grandchildren are babies. I didn't even think about them growing up. They were just But then when they started to do that, it was such a pleasure to see them growing. And one of the things that I remember too is when they're so young, and I didn't see this as much when I was younger and I had my children, but when I saw my grandchildren, I saw how honest they were and how free and how they were not connected with anything yet. They were living from themselves, and they were so pure in their actions and honest. And it was such a great time to really connect with them and share that with them in my own way. I guess I did that. And I wanted to keep that as they got older, keep that connection, try to keep them from being so heavily influenced by all this other stuff going on. And so that's just what I'd done on the sidelines with their parents raising them themselves. And now that they're young adults, some of them are still little, two of them, but I connect with them more because now I can dig deeper into them and they're more on their own and they're people now as opposed to just children. And I can bring up the adult issues and share more of what I think and what I believe. And I do that with them with the approach. One of my granddaughters was curious about some of the teachings that I had to talk about. And so I gave her a book by Michael Singer. And because she was talking along those lines, so I figured that might be helpful to her. But I told her, I said, read the first chapter of this book. If you connect with it, then read the rest of the book. If it doesn't make any sense to her and you're not really interested, just put it down or give it to somebody else or forget about it. Only go to what you're drawn to and you really can connect with. And it's been that way actually with my own children and with all my grandchildren. That I'm not trying to force anything on them. I just want them to follow their path and help them have different sources to choose from and to follow if they're drawn to it. And that's what I continue to do and will continue to do. And I can see as they get older, they get curious in different arenas that I think I can help them along with just because of my experience and the teachers that I have worked with. And that's just what I'm looking at for the future and still working on myself. I still feel like I've got a long way to go that I can improve. And just by me having as much benefit as I have from what I have done, I want to keep on this path so I can even expand more and make myself a better person too.
Yeah, I don't know if that we're ever done. I've been doing the same work for so long, and I just feel like there's always something that comes at us that challenges us. And I feel like it's, and for me, it's, I refer to it as God or my higher power. I feel like that's being brought to me so I can always do more, so I can always be more, I can always share more. And it sounds like that's what you're doing. So I'm very grateful. Thank you for giving us your time today. And thank you for being the amazing man that you are. I think we always think that if somebody's this wonderful person that they've done everything they can to be there. But I think what makes you so wonderful is that to keep hearing that you're willing to learn more and do more and see more and be more. That is the best gift we can give, in my opinion, that we can give our children and our grandchildren and your great grandchildren. And I think you're going to be around a long time to witness all that. So again, thank you for giving us your time and for that book. It's made a difference for Dr. Paul personally. And it's funny because my son will be 24 this year and he's in a great relationship and they will probably get married someday and have children someday. He's already on the same page and everything he's been through. So for me, it's easy. It wasn't, I have one child. It was really easy it's been his life, but I can't imagine if what it would be like to have a child where I really have to be concerned that they're going to make the wrong decisions.
Yeah.
So Thank you again, Grandpa James. I will call you that forever. And I can't wait to meet you in person also.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Grandpa James, I want you to speak to those teenagers, young adults, and even new parents. What's the most important thing you would like to say to them?
I think that what I would say is you love your children, or you're going to love your children if your children are on the way, and you want to do what's best for them. That's only a natural impulse. All of us feel that way. And so in order to do that today, you have to do more than just trust your doctor and trust what the public is telling you. Today, you have to look into the research and really find out what's best for your children. Unfortunately, that's the way it is, but now we know that, and we won't just fall victim of it. And we have the opportunity to actually look and see what's going on and consider it, consider what the right thing to do is. And so it's very important to do that. And I would say on whatever level you do it, do your research, find out what's going on before you do anything to your children, to put anything into them. They're born with the perfect body and with a beautiful body, and you don't want to inject things into that to disrupt that beautiful balance of what God put into them, and unnecessarily. That's what I would say.
Perfect. I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you.
I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsinscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.